Traditional revenue sources for public media and media at large are declining this year, and we at Marketplace are not immune to those trends. We're currently tracking behind target for this budget year. We're tightening up our expenses, yes, but the need for trusted, grounded, fact-based reporting is as pressing as ever, and we simply cannot cut back on our mission. So we're turning to the listeners like you. Please step up now and invest in Marketplace. If you haven't given yet, now's the time. Go to marketplace.org/donate.
This Marketplace podcast is supported by Invest Puerto Rico. What's next in innovation? That's not the right question. It's where. Puerto Rico, more than just a tropical paradise, it's innovation's paradise, where startups and global players coexist in a vast and vibrant ecosystem, where talent runs deep, highly skilled, and bilingual. Plus, the island offers the most competitive tax incentives in the U.S. If you believe your business can go anywhere, Puerto Rico is the place. Find out more at investpr.org/marketplace. Again, that address is investpr.org/marketplace.
We learned a lot this week about the economy in 2021. So where do we go from here? From American Public Media, this is Marketplace. In Baltimore, I'm Amy Scott, in for Kai Rizdahl. It's Friday, January 28th. Good to have you with us. Another day, another flashback to the 80s. Today, it's a key inflation gauge, the PCE price index, which the Bureau of Economic Analysis says rose 5.8% last month compared to a year earlier. That's the fastest pace since 1982, and another sign that inflation is proving stickier than probably anyone would like. And that's where we're going to start our weekly wrap today with Neela Richardson at ADP and Heather Long at The Washington Post. Hi, you two.
Hi, Amy.
Hi, Amy.
So let's start with inflation. And Neela, I'll go to you first. I want to ask you about how higher wages are fitting into this equation, because we also learned today that employment costs are up sharply. And we're going to talk about that more later in the show. But, you know, how much are those higher wages a cause of versus a consequence of inflation?
Well, that's a great question, Amy. And the inflation that we are seeing now is a less of a consequence of wages. It's more a consequence of the overall pandemic and its effect on global supply and demand. At first, the pandemic was really deflationary. There was a drop in both supply and demand. But as we've evolved and progressed through this economic cycle, we've seen supply bottlenecks. They've been widespread, well-documented, shipping delays, increase in input prices that firms have been very vocal about, and consumers too, when they look on the shelves and their favorite products aren't there. We also saw surging demand. So high demand and low supply, and that's really what's contributed to inflation. Wages have played a smaller part overall.
Well, Heather, we talk a lot about how the PCE price index is the Fed's preferred measure of inflation. And I always wonder, why is that? And how is it different from the consumer price index, which we also follow, and which was up 7% in December?
Exactly, Amy. So the headline takeaway is both of these gauges are telling us the same thing, which is that inflation is basically at a 40-year high. But obviously, the details are a little bit different. PCE is telling us 5.8% prices are up in the past year. The consumer price index, CPI, is telling us 7% in the past year. So that's, not exactly the same. I'd say the key takeaways here are the CPI is really a measure of households. So they go and survey households about what they're spending on. It's also focused more on urban consumers. And PCE, on the flip side, they go and ask the businesses, the suppliers, what the cost situation looks like. And it's focused on all across the country. So the other thing that I think is going to be very important for 2022 is how they characterize rent increases. So rent is about 30% of the consumer price index, the CPI. It's only about 15% of PCE. And that's that could also produce a pretty big difference moving forward this year when we expect rents to be a big issue. So, you know, why everyone has their favorite reasons why they prefer one or the other, but I think there's going to be a lot of pressure on the Fed to really be focused on what Americans are feeling, and those rent prices are very much a big part of the discussion right now.
So all of this, whichever measure you look at, gives the Fed more reason to raise interest rates, which it said this week it will do, likely in March. Neela, what do you think that means for the job market, which still has not fully recovered from pre-pandemic levels?
No, we're still 3.6 million jobs away from pre-pandemic, and no net new jobs since the high water mark of 2019. Still, there was a lot of recovery in jobs over the course of 2021, upwards of 6 million jobs added. So what happens now as the economy shifts? Inflation is the front burner concern. What inflation does is it erodes real wages, right? So your dollar doesn't go as far because prices have gone up. So even as we saw wage inflation, especially in the fourth quarter of last year, we saw it in the presence of an overall increase in prices. So, you know, people are getting paid up more, maybe, yes, but their real wages aren't going as far. And that's not the situation that gets people back in the labor market and people sticking on the job, which is what the economy needs to grow.
I want to stick with what this Fed policy means for consumers, because Heather, you know, it's not just March, right? We're probably looking at several rate hikes throughout the year. How does that affect regular people when we go to, you know, borrow money to buy a car or a house, or, you know, spend money on our credit cards?
Exactly. The main takeaway is if you do have credit card debt and you can pay some more of it down, do that right away. Those rates will be moving up, and so it will get more expensive going forward. And you're right. Also, it makes it more expensive to borrow money. This is kind of intentional. It's the way that they're trying to slow down a little bit of spending in the economy. And I was just looking at those numbers myself. Mortgage rates right now this week hit about 3.6%. Average across the country. That's up from 2.7% a year ago. So the market is already pricing in a number of those increases, and we only expect borrowing to buy a house or buy a car or to start a new business to continue to creep up the rest of the year. Now, historically speaking, people on this radio podcast probably remember, you know, the days when mortgage rates sometimes were over 10% or over 15%.
Right.
So, you know, 3.6% is not the end of the world, but gee, it sure feels a lot more expensive than a year ago.
But to carry on to Heather's overall point, though, house price, even though mortgage rates are low, house prices have gone, you know, through the roof in terms of price appreciation. So we want to make sure that that price appreciation doesn't keep growing, because if you can't afford the house, it doesn't matter how low the mortgage rate is. So prices, again, the biggest issue going forward in terms of the Main Street economy and getting inflation under control. And also interest rates, were rock bottom levels for the short-term rates now. So again, important to remember that we're looking to get to a rate that is closer to pre-pandemic levels for short-term rates, and we have a little bit to go. We're near zero this time around.
Yeah, and you've got to wonder what's going to be happening in the housing market over the next couple of months as people are racing to try to close deals before rates get even higher, when there still is just such a low supply of homes for sale.
Right. And that's the key issue. It's the low supply for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. All right. Neela Richardson is at ADP. Heather Long is with The Washington Post. Good to talk to both of you, and have a good weekend.
Thanks, Amy.
Thank you.
On Wall Street, what? Me worry? We'll have the details when we do the numbers. What the numbers tell us about the economy is one thing, but we feel what we feel. And based on the latest survey from the University of Michigan, the American consumer is not feeling great about this economy. Despite the strongest GDP growth in decades and a strong job market, consumer sentiment is at a 10-year low. Marketplace's Amanda Peacher has more on what's got us down.
If there's one thing for certain we can say about the economic recovery and how Americans feel about it, it's that it's complicated. Yesterday, there's news about strong GDP growth in 2021. Hooray. But today, there's not so great news about dwindling consumer confidence.
There's definitely a sign among the American public that there's a growing pessimism about the economy.
Mallory Newell is a vice president at the polling firm Ipsos.
Inflation continues to go up. People are definitely feeling that pocketbook squeeze.
Like Alyssa Grovemiller, who works with alumni at Ohio State University in Columbus. She says it's almost like the price of food goes up in between every visit to the grocery store.
I feel like everything is more expensive. You know, milk, cheese, things you buy normally are just the price going up.
Still, Grovemiller says she's financially stable and managing okay. But that's not necessarily the case for low-income workers, says Jeff Jones, a senior editor with the Gallup poll.
1 in 5 lower-income Americans say that higher prices are creating a severe financial hardship.
Then there's also Omicron, which caused many people who earn less than $50,000 a year to miss work recently, says John Lear with Morning Consult.
You've got a lot of primarily lower-income adults who are being hit on a couple different fronts.
That's probably why consumer sentiment dipped so much in just the past couple of weeks. Lear says it's a contrast to some of the rosier end-of-year 2021 numbers.
A lot of people right now are looking at data from December, and they're saying that wasn't that bad.
But, he says, January is already a different story. I'm Amanda Peacher for Marketplace.
Besides how consumers are feeling, we also got to look today at how they were spending in December. During the last month of the holiday shopping season, spending on services grew, but on stuff, not so much. The overall number was down 0.6%. It's another sign of how uncertain the economy has been for many people and businesses. Which brings us to Patty Delgado. She's a retailer in Los Angeles that we've been following. And after what she went through last year, she's now trying something new.
I had a really hard 2021, like a lot of people. As an entrepreneur that like works around the clock and I have the stereotypical, you know, founder struggles, I'm tired. I'm very tired of my inbox. I'm tired of my phone. In order to get where we want to be, in order to like live these dreams or these like beautiful goals, like you have to compromise every bit of yourself. And so I think all these really like existential questions really got me thinking about, well, what does a business look like where you can have boundaries for yourself that kind of like protect you? So in 2021, while going through my depression, I decided to start the Feelings Gym, which is kind of a pseudo e-commerce brand that really creates limits on how much time we engage online. For example, having an e-commerce website that's only open Monday through Friday with certain business hours. Right now we're saying 9 to 5. And our first product is the Let Go Journal, which is a notebook that it has writing prompt stickers and it has like a healthy balance of like lined and unlined pages. Right now, it's just me again. And I laugh because, you know, I find myself where I started with my first company. It's the greatest irony, right? Like I am now a 2-time founder not because I hate being a founder, but I hate the founder struggles. I guess I just like can't escape this life. But I think while I don't have it all figured out, my risk tolerance is very high.
Like, this could be a total flop. Like, what? I can't buy this on a Sunday afternoon. Trash. You know, I'm expecting that attitude, or I'm expecting, you know, very frustrated, digitally frustrated millennials to get behind this. I'm ready to launch. I have our landing pages ready, and I have our first product ready. I don't want to rush things, you know, going back to like constantly wanting to be faster and grow quicker. That's not my goal here. You know, I'm taking my time. I know what founder burnout is like, and I'm not trying to repeat that again with the second business.
That was Patty Delgado getting ready to launch her second business in Los Angeles. Coming up.
There are multiple offers coming in, sight unseen.
Wonder how that's going to work out. But first, let's do the numbers. The Dow Jones Industrial Average gained 564 points, 1.6% to close at 34,725. The NASDAQ rose 417 points, 0.3%, to land at 13,770. And the S&P 500 found 105 points, 2.4%, to end at 4,431. Maybe hard to believe considering the week we've just had, but for the week, the Dow rose 1.3%, the NASDAQ was flat, the S&P 500 lifted 0.7%. We heard from Amanda Peter that consumer sentiment sank in January. Looking at some consumer retailers, Costco bulked up 2%, ODP Corporation, that's Office Depot and Max, or Offices Depot and Max, rose 2.8%. The Clorox company brightened 0.8%. Bond prices rose. The yield on the 10-year T-note fell to 1.78%. You're listening to Marketplace.
My name is Lee Hawkins. I've been a journalist for over 25 years. On my new podcast, What Happened in Alabama, I get answers to some of the hardest questions about how things came to be for many Black Americans and the truth that must come before any reconciliation can happen. I investigate my family history, my upbringing in Minnesota, and my father's painful nightmares about growing up in Alabama. What Happened in Alabama is a new series confronting the cycles of trauma for myself, my family, and for many Black Americans. Listen now.
Hey everyone, it's Rima Khreis, host of This Is Uncomfortable. If you're looking for some good recommendations on books to read, well, you should join This Is Uncomfortable's Summer Book Club. Every other week in our newsletter, we'll share a new book that'll make you rethink your relationship to money, class, and work, while also featuring an interview with the author or an expert on the topic. Plus, when you join, you'll be entered in a giveaway where you could win some This Is Uncomfortable merch. Be sure to check it out. Sign up today at marketplace.org/bookclub.
This is Marketplace. I'm Amy Scott. We're going to come back to something that came up in the wrap earlier, the cost of labor, also known as wages and benefits. We learned from the Labor Department today that the amount American employers pay workers rose faster last year than at any point since 2001, a 4% increase. And with wages and prices on the rise, you better believe policymakers at the Fed are watching. Marketplace's Lily Jamali has more.
Economists say what the Fed is especially wary of right now is the so-called wage price spiral, when prices across the economy rise as a result of higher wages. That's not what seems to be happening yet, says J.W. Mason, who teaches economics at CUNY's John Jay College.
For most of the inflation we're seeing now, wages are not a big piece of it.
He says that's because of where inflation is rising the fastest.
It's energy, it's autos. Rents are beginning to go up, which is a big problem, but the labor that goes into running that is a very small part of the cost of that.
Those categories fall in the goods bucket of this economy, not to be confused with the services bucket. While prices are rising for both, economist Wendy Adelberg of the Brookings Institution says spending on goods has been off the charts.
Actually, literally, we have had to redraw the chart in order to show what's been happening to goods inflation recently.
The reason for that? Still 2 years into the pandemic,
we are all gorging on goods.
Eventually, though, she says Americans will stop gorging on goods and shift spending back to more labor-intensive services like haircuts and travel. When that happens, rising wages may start to fuel inflation, says Chris Varveris, co-head of U.S. economics at IHS Market. And he expects wages to continue their climb over the next 6 to 12 months because there are more jobs than workers in the economy right now.
And that suggests that workers will have considerable leverage to support the request for still higher wages.
Even with wages rising, they still aren't keeping up with inflation. And that's another reason workers may keep asking their employers for more. I'm Lily Jamali for Marketplace.
Like it or not, a lot of us who can are still working at home. The Labor Department somewhat quaintly calls it teleworking. And in December, more than 11% of workers did so at some point because of the pandemic. Now that working from home is much more widely accepted, possibly even required, more and more people are choosing where they want that home to be. And for some people, that means choosing to live in places they feel are safer from the impacts of climate change. Minnesota Public Radio's Dan Crocker reports on how a somewhat unlikely city has become a destination for some climate migrants.
Jamie Alexander says she'll never forget the campfire. In 2018, the wildfire killed 85 people in Northern California, burned thousands of homes, and filled the air with thick smoke.
The air quality in San Francisco was like in the hazardous category for 2 weeks straight and just had considerable health impacts on my kids.
So when the pandemic hit in 2020 and another bad wildfire season was forecast, Alexander's family hopped in their camper van and headed for Minnesota. They landed in Duluth, on the shore of Lake Superior, where at first they just intended to ride out the summer.
We just fell in love with it here. And 2020 in California was so horrible for the air quality.
So they decided to make the move permanent. They bought a house in Duluth right on Lake Superior.
I did get into paddleboarding this summer, which is not something I ever expected I would do, but it's pretty amazing.
Alexander is one of several people who have moved to Duluth in the past few years, at least in part because of climate change. Jesse Keenan researches climate migration at Tulane University. A couple of years ago, he identified Duluth as an ideal landing spot for people like Alexander. He says as climate conditions worsen, more people will leave places like California for places with more moderate climates, especially now that remote work is more accepted.
There is a cohort of Americans who have the means, the resources, and they have the elective mobility to be on the move.
But when Keenan first came to Duluth to discuss his idea, locals were skeptical. Real estate agent Karen Pagel-Gernt remembers when she first heard about it. It was in the middle of winter, and it was 20 below zero.
And so to me, the whole idea of climate migration for folks coming here, it kind of made me laugh.
But then people started calling. She's since worked with clients from around the country who cite climate change as one of the reasons for choosing Duluth, a small city of about 86,000 people. There isn't any data to show how many of those people there actually are. But Adam Fulton, who directs planning and economic development for the city, says more telecommuters are working from Duluth. And there are lots of anecdotal stories about people moving from out of state.
We are hearing that there are multiple offers coming in, sight unseen, for properties that, you know, previously might have sat on the market.
Which raises a potential problem for places like Duluth, Like many cities, there's a shortage of affordable housing here. The median price of a house rose 10% in the past year to $240,000. Fulton says the city is working to add a greater variety of housing options for newcomers and locals. People say they factor in climate change when deciding where to move, according to the online real estate site Redfin, but a lot of them still end up moving to places like Florida and Arizona that are facing severe climate impacts, says Redfin economist Daryl Fairweather.
I think it's mostly just a select group of people who are, maybe they're the ones who've been personally impacted by climate change that are making the move based on that decision.
And there isn't anywhere totally immune to the effects of climate change. Last summer, wildfires burning in Canada blanketed Minnesota with smoke. Still, Doug Coma, who moved to Duluth 2 years ago from Northern California after dealing with wildfires and flooding, says he knows several other Californians also considering a move here.
I think Duluth as a climate migration hub is already a thing. I think we're just starting to recognize it. And I think 2, 3, 5 years from now, it's going to be what Duluth will likely be known for.
But for prospective migrants, Coma offers a warning. Winters in Duluth are still long and still cold. In Duluth, I'm Dan Crocker for Marketplace.
This final note on the way out, a sign that pressure at the ports may finally be easing a little. The Pacific Merchant Shipping Association says container dwell time, that is, the amount of time a shipping container sits at a marine terminal before being driven away on a truck, was down slightly in December at the ports of Los Angeles and Long Beach to 7.7 days. If that sounds like a long time, it was almost 8.5 days in November. The average pre-COVID times was under 3 days. It's the busiest port complex in the United States and has been dealing with a huge influx of cargo. Together, those two ports processed a record 20 million 20-foot containers worth of goods in 2021, almost 16% more than the year before. All right, we got to go, but here's your moment of economic context on this Friday. As the United States threatens economic sanctions against Russia if it invades Ukraine, Ukraine is worried about the effect of all this talk of invasion on its own economy. Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky told foreign reporters today, "We don't need this panic." He also said the country needs $4 to $5 billion in foreign investment and aid to stabilize the economy. Our theme music was composed by BJ Lederman. Marketplace's executive producer is Nancy Fergali. Nancy Cassett is the managing director of news. Neil Scarborough is the vice president and general manager. And I'm Amy Scott. Have a good weekend, everybody. We'll be back on Monday. This is APM.
My name is Lee Hawkins. I've been a journalist for over 25 years. On my new podcast, What Happened in Alabama, I get answers to some of the hardest questions about how things came to be for many Black Americans and the truth that must come before any reconciliation can happen. I investigate my family history, my upbringing in Minnesota, and my father's painful nightmares about growing up in Alabama. What Happened in Alabama is a new series confronting the cycles of trauma for myself, my family, and for many Black Americans. Listen now.